Now then, at what, 8:15? It's certainly a decision that's drawn a lot of scrutiny. President Trump's move to withdraw US troops from Syria triggered a backlash at home. It was news that first came out on December 19th, Trump unexpectedly saying there would be a troop pullout. Reports then suggested it would happen probably within a month. We soon heard of Defense Secretary James Mattis's resignation. But now reports suggest that it's going to be more like a four-month pullout. Not exactly super slow, but slower than a month. And critics have been concerned about the impact anyway, with the New York Times warning, for example, that the exit will be seen as a betrayal of the Kurds and a boon for ISIS. Let's welcome Professor Nader Hashemi, Director of the Center for Middle East Studies at the University of Denver, to examine the implications of President Trump's Syria decision. And good morning to you from Seoul.
And good evening to you from Toronto.
How abrupt was that decision? It was seen as being sudden and unexpected, but did you see it coming in any form when President Trump said on December 19th that there would be a pullout?
No, I think it's safe to say that most serious observers of U.S. foreign policy under Donald Trump, specifically with respect to the Middle East, were shocked by the announcement. Only a few days before the announcement, you know, senior American officials tasked with the job of shaping and advising and defending U.S. Foreign policy in Syria were saying the exact opposite, that the United States would be in Syria for the long haul and that there would be no U.S. withdrawal until a final political settlement in Syria was reached and until Iranian troops were pulled out of Syria. And so this came as a complete shock to, I think, most everyone following this story.
He tweeted, President Trump, on Monday that they would be slowly sending troops back home and still fighting ISIS remnants. Of course, a few days earlier, he had all but declared victory pretty much over ISIS, hadn't he?
That's true. Earlier this summer, there was a UN report that said that there's approximately 20,000 to 30,000 ISIS fighters still alive today in Iraq and in Syria, in some remote areas. So it's true that ISIS is, you know, a shadow of its former self, but they are still able to exist in these remote areas. And the big concern that many of us have is that as a result of Trump's announcement, ISIS will be able to reconstitute itself and expand its support. One thing that we've learned from the war against ISIS is that it thrives in areas and in places where there is a security vacuum. So the United States pulling out of roughly one-third of Syria, precisely in those areas where ISIS was located, suggests that there will be an opportunity for them reconstitute and rebuild their base of support. So there's a lot to be concerned about with respect to this announcement by the president.
We've seen this vision of Bashar al-Assad, the Syrian leader, is certainly being demonized over the last few months, years, in fact. Russia has been one of the supporters of the official Syrian regime and was, perhaps in the form of President Vladimir Putin, the only power that openly praised President Trump's pullout decision. That kind of is an indication in itself of how we should be viewing this, isn't it?
Absolutely, I agree. It's not a coincidence that Vladimir Putin was quite thrilled, by Trump's announcement, because they stand to be the biggest beneficiaries. For those people following the war in Syria, the biggest external actor in the conflict that has effectively intervened about 3 years ago, shifting the tide of the war in the direction of Bashar al-Assad, was Russia. The other outside actor was, of course, Iran. And now with the United States pulling out of Syria, where they roughly had control over about a third of the country in the northwestern region, that means that the countries that stand to benefit from an American withdrawal are precisely Russia and precisely Iran and precisely Bashar al-Assad. That's why there was an open and explicit statement by Vladimir Putin supporting the decision, and it effectively means that the entire country now of Syria can be consolidated under the really brutal, repressive rule of Bashar al-Assad, which doesn't bode well for the people of Syria, obviously, but it certainly doesn't bode well for any prospects for stability in Syria and the broader Middle East.
Where does this leave Turkey, though?
Well, Turkey now, I think, also stands to benefit because if you follow the story of Trump's announcement, it was preceded by a very important phone call with the president of Turkey, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, where the Turkish president promised that in the aftermath of an American withdrawal from Syria, that Turkish troops would then take up the fight against the remnants of ISIS. And so Turkey's big concern in the northeastern part of Syria is with the Kurds. The Kurds are the strongest, militia organization backed by the Americans that roughly controls this part of Syria. And Turkey is very concerned about the prospects of Kurdish autonomy on the other side of its border, then possibly linking up with Kurdish groups in Turkish territory and in Iraq that also aspire to autonomy and really, if you want to be honest, political independence. So Turkey's obsession with the Kurds and with Kurdish autonomy and Kurdish demands for self-determination is a long-standing theme in Turkish politics. And I think part of the deal here that Trump has, I think, struck with the Turkish president is precisely for the Turks to fill in the vacuum that the Americans will create as a result of their withdrawal. But of course, this means a disaster for the Kurds in this part of the world.
If U.S. allies would have felt betrayed at all in Syria, will they have been reassured to any extent by President Trump's also fairly unexpected visit to Iraq?
No, I think it's the exact opposite, because it shows that the United States is willing to sort of use the Kurds when it's beneficial to the United States to fight against ISIS, and then abandon them when they are no longer useful, and leave them to their own resources to fight against their adversaries in the region, in this case the Turkish government and the Turkish military. So I think this does not bode well. It does not reassure American allies, because if the United States can so callously and easily just abandon the Kurds, who are really the key fighting force in the war against ISIS, I think it's important to remember, then other allies perhaps are starting to question whether the United States can be a dependable ally in the future. So I think this is quite a disaster for American alliances around the world, and it shakes confidence in the future of U.S. foreign policy globally.
Well, that certainly seemed to be the concern of James Mattis in stepping down. But President Trump has said U.S. forces will stay in Iraq and could re-enter Syria from there. How effective can the U.S. be from Iraq in the region?
Well, obviously not as effective as being sort of on the ground, allied with local forces who are on the front lines of the battle against ISIS. By trying to rely on what you just suggested, using American troops in Iraq, it means that you have to try and project power in distances that are much further away from the battle line. I think that's the fallback position. That's the justification that Trump is using. He's saying it's not a complete abandonment of the war against ISIS. We still have troops in the area. But I think that's very much the justification that Trump is using to his critics, that, should ISIS reassert itself, there are troops in the region that can at least theoretically combat them. So we'll have to wait and see exactly what happens, but I think there's a general consensus that Trump's decision is going to further the destabilization of the Middle East and most likely create better circumstances for the reassertion of ISIS.
Well, President Trump, as he commented yesterday, has suggested that if anyone else but him had achieved what he had in Syria, they would be a national hero. That's his public view of himself. Where do you see this actually unfolding in reality, given that if we go back 2 or 3 years when we were doing reviews and previews of the Syria situation on an annual basis, as I suggested before, it wasn't just ISIS that was the enemy, it was Bashar al-Assad, and it was very hard to see Bashar al-Assad ever returning to the international community with any credibility. But that seems to be the only way out at this point.
Well, unfortunately, that's the position that, the international community has taken with respect to the root causes of the conflict in Syria. And it's a position that really needs to be understood. It's not really a position that Donald Trump has arrived at. This really goes back to the policy decisions that Barack Obama arrived at with respect to how the conflict in Syria. And the conflict in Syria fundamentally, goes back to the dawn of the Arab Spring protests when Syria, like other Arab countries, were engulfed in nonviolent peaceful protests. But of course, the difference in the case of Syria was that you had a brutal regime that responded with war crimes and crimes against humanity that crushed a peaceful uprising, gradually militarized that uprising, and then radicalized it. So Bashar al-Assad, as you just indicated, really is the key culprit here. He's the one who's responsible for the vast majority of the atrocities, the people who are dispossessed, the destabilization. And as you rightly pointed out, the fact that as we are contemplating now and seeing the end of the war in Syria, that the one person who's presided over 500,000 deaths, war crimes and crimes against humanity, that are beyond, the human imagination. For him to emerge victorious is, I think, a tragedy in and of itself.
Regardless of ISIS. Professor Hashemi, we've got to jump in there. Thank you very much.
Thank you.